Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast Reader's Roundtable edition. I'm Jessica Trotter, and today Cheryl Lindemann and I are going to talk books and reading with, you know, both a nod to March's Reading Month and probably Women's History Month. And we also talked about a sort of a theme of community.
Yeah.
Is coming out of this one.
Absolutely.
Community kind of became the underlying theme for our titles.
Yeah.
It had a lot to do with what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
I think we talked a little bit about whether we wanted to talk about any of the things that happened at MSU last month or not, but it so affected my reading.
Yes.
It's so weirdly timed in on my reading that it does sort of come into what we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and it manifested for each of us in a totally different direction
in
a different way. But it, when we looked at it, like you said, we said, wow, community kind of comes through in these books. And as we talked about during the early months of the pandemic, what happened this month affected our reading.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up literally, and our listeners may relate to this just for many reasons. I picked up about 7 books, and I was like, nope. Nope, can't read that. So the things that I settled on are maybe a little different than I usually bring to the podcast, but that's okay. And
I would say
happens.
That's sort of the same thing with me. I am bringing the heavier titles, I think, this month.
Yeah.
And I guess I can get started with that, and you can sort of see what we're talking about. The first book that I wanted to talk about this month and I'm going to talk about this month is Parable of the Sower by Octavia E. Butler. She was the first science fiction writer to be awarded the MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. This is a classic. It's a Nebula Award-winning title. It's a series starter set in a post-apocalyptic, starts in California. It explores climate change, social inequity. It's a standard text across college campuses now. It is a science fiction story that looks at, follows the life of a young woman who is living in a walled community, in a society that is just kind of, it's on the verge, in America on the verge of collapse. We've got climate issues, we've got, drug issues, we've got violence happening outside the walls, we've got a community that's trying to live self-sufficiently as much as possible so that it doesn't have to go outside its walls. There's a lot to it. There's the main character, Lauren, in her head is trying to understand the world as it is, trying to understand, she's a preacher's kid, she's trying to understand religion and how she differs from her father. And within it, it's Parable of the Sower. This really is sort of laying the groundwork of what could have been a very long-running series. There are actually only 2 books in the series published, Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents, before Octavia Butler died. But in the laying this foundation, she sort of creates, Lauren, the main character, is starting to create what becomes essentially a religion. And that invented religion has inspired a lot of activists and writers now. So in this book actually hit the New York Times bestseller list in 2020.
Wow.
For the first time. She died in 96. This book was probably published in 1993. So it's one of those things where there's just a lot going on. I will say flat out, I read this month. Part of doing this was that my book discussion group, the speculative fiction group for downtown Lansing, decided to read it. It's the 30th anniversary of the release, and it was Black History Month, so we started to do that for February. I'm sorry, we're taping this in the week that was still February, not in February. But it's not a book that I was rushing to read. It's one I wanted to read, but I knew it was going to be uncomfortable, and I knew it, you know, almost too real. And it is, and it was, and to be reading it in the middle, to be well into it when the shootings on the MSU campus and off happened, it made it that much more uncomfortable. Yeah. But it is a fabulous book. It is fabulous writing. It is uncomfortable, but it is inspiring in a lot of interesting ways. One of the things that hit me, maybe differently now, is there's each of the chapter headings has a bit to do with the invented religion, and one of the pieces from it's called Earth Seed, and one of the quotes at the front, in sort of about two-thirds in, is embrace diversity, unite, or be divided, robbed, ruled, killed by those who see you as prey. Embrace diversity or be destroyed. And I just sort of feel like coming out of 2020 and the pandemic and everything else that's going on and having what happened in the Greater Lansing community to, you know, it happened very specifically to certain people, but it also happened to the rest of us. And the importance of community in that feels, you know, important to bring up and discuss.
Absolutely. Wow. That sounds like an amazing book.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah. But it is hard, too.
Yeah. Well, along kind of somebody who really believed in a lot of the same themes, talked about a lot of the same themes, and really died too young, I'm going to go back about 23 years or 22 years to an older book again. It kind of ties together once again. And this book is one I like to keep an eye, we do keep an eye for our job, for adding for holds, for books that are really popular. And it's always interesting when older books are popular,
really?
When they continue. We continue to add holds for, and we think about, you know, why is this? But this is one and an author who has been, I think, popular pretty much forever and doesn't lose that appeal. And I'm always adding fresh copies. And the title is All About Love, New Visions by Bell Hooks. And this was published in 2001. And Bell Hooks did die in 2021. And she was the author of over 40 books on race, feminism, gender studies, sexuality, art, class. Those are just some of the topics that she touched on. She also, and I just learned this doing the research for the podcast, she started a center at Berea College called the Bell Hooks Center. And it was established to provide underrepresented students, especially Black and Brown, femme, queer, and Appalachian individuals at Berea College, a safe space where they can develop their activist expression. And I didn't realize that. And I did not know her connection to Berea College, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, arts college outside of, you know, Lexington, Kentucky. But this book is really interesting for so many reasons, and I'm so glad I read it. And the tie to what, Jessica, what you were just talking about to me, is that it's about love. And she even says, you know, we think about love and we instantly think romantic love. And I think we still do. That's the first thing. Maybe family love or love between, you know, that you love your, you know, if you love children or love your parents or that kind of thing. But it's always romantic love first. And that's that touches on that a little bit in this book. But each chapter is about a different type of love. So there's self-love. There's love, you know, that if you have a, you know, in religious context, there's relationships with extended family. There's a chapter on grief. But one of the most powerful things, and again, this hit me at a time when our community is reeling from the shock of what happened in the last month, but about an orientation of living with a love ethic, not a romantic love ethic, but living with that idea of what does that mean? And she talks about families where children didn't grow up model, you know, seeing love modeled in her family, different things, but having that love ethic, having that orientation, and how it's so sorely needed. And again, this book was written 22 years ago, and here we are again.
Right.
And we're talking about the same things, and it's a totally different climate. We have, you know, I listened to an interview that Jessica actually told me about on NPR with her talking about this book, and she talks about magazines, the media at the time, what we see in the media, movies and magazines. Well, now it's social media. And it's interesting. I can say in some ways that in social media, it can go both ways. So we talked about this a little bit. It can be negative, but also can be community building. And you can see some interchanges of that kind of community love coming through that channel. But that we're still struggling with this, and that I really like this book because it orients you again to that goal. Mm-hmm. And she defines love. Another piece of it that I thought was really interesting was she talks about a lot of authors at the time, self-help and popular psychology authors.
Right.
And she quotes them. And they're people that our listeners may have heard of, like Jack Kornfield, M. Scott Peck, John Bradshaw, Harold Kushner. Most of them are all white men that are mentioned in this. And I feel like this is an interesting area that this book written now would have a lot more diversity in every sense of the word in the psychology and self-help areas. And it's one of the ways that I was like, okay, this is cool. This is something that I can see as a librarian, how we've moved forward and how I remember these names. They were on our shelves in the 100s section of our library in the Dewey Decimal System. But now we've got this huge range. And again, I've talked about this before, but self-help, personal psychology resources are one of our top and not just at our library, around the country, for nonfiction use in this country, it's one of the top-selling areas with nonfiction books. So people have so much more to work with now, and things that represent them better, that actually speak to them, and issues that they're more concerned with. So that was kind of a neat thing that came out of this book. I love the book, but it was something that was like, okay, we've done this, and we continue to do that. So
that's fabulous. Yeah. So my next title, again, we're staying sort of in community, and this one actually relates directly back to Octavia Butler as well. I want to talk about Grievers by Adrienne Marie Brown. Some of you may be aware of Brown. She is a social justice activist, a facilitator, a writer, a musician, podcaster, was based out of Detroit for many years. And Grievers is... And actually, to take it back to Octavia, in 2020, when everything was happening, both in the social justice and the pandemic sense, she actually, you can go find now, if you want to read along with, if you pick up either of the Parable books, she did a chapter-by-chapter podcast with Toshi Regan that is available, called Octavia's Parables. That is very neat. But also, she's just involved in so many different things, and it's inspired by Octavia Butler's Earth Seeds, that religion that was created within the books, the idea for shaping change and through community. And the interesting thing is, Grievers is actually... I think we have it classified as horror, or actually maybe it is just fiction. It is something that is, it's a pandemic novel. It is set in Detroit. There is it is not our pandemic. It is something that is, it's a mysterious plague that is affecting people. And the narrator, Dune's mother, is the patient zero. And what that means is that they don't understand what's going on. They don't know how to help her, but they can spend a whole lot of money that she doesn't have trying to help her, or she can be sent home and have to care for her mother until she dies, which is exactly what happens. So it does look, you know, briefly at the healthcare system. It looks at who's actually being attacked by whatever this disease is. It is a love letter to activists in Detroit. If you look really closely at the characters, you suddenly realize that Dune is a Afro-Chinese woman and who lives at the beginning of the book with her sick mother and her grandmother, paternal grandmother. And her paternal grandmother seems vaguely like Grace Lee Boggs. It's just very, very, who is somebody that inspired and Brown worked with. So it's just, it's very interesting to kind of, it really is a love letter to the activist community in Detroit, as well as Detroit itself. And she's using, to stay alive, she's using things like community gardens and that have been created over the years. And there are still people in all of this happening trying to unite and figure out what's going on. It's just a really interesting book. It has that reminiscent feel of Octavia Butler. It's not an up book, but it's really interesting and hopeful in a way that I found interesting. Yeah. And it is the first of a series. The second book just came out, called Maroons. So that's Grievers by Adrienne Marie Brown.
Excellent. And so fascinating how those came together around the same time for you.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to go in a little different direction mm-hmm. now. And again, this sort of reflects probably where I was mentally on mm-hmm. this one, which was, I do have to mention, it's March, so the armchair gardener, you know, it's the most restless month, right? It's like, we're almost there. And late February, I get that, you know, looking at my seeds, thinking about what I'm going to do. So I always want garden books around this time. So one of my books is a garden book, but the other book is related in that it's another really popular topic for nonfiction books in our system are home design, home decor, home decorating books. They're always popular. We get as many of them that I can get my hands on, and they're top circulators at every one of our branches in nonfiction. And this one, I just absolutely loved it. I don't think I've ever brought one of these on before, quite like this, because it's so beautiful, but yet it's also really, really practical and inspiring. And it's called Remodelista, The Low Impact Home, a source book for stylish, eco-conscious living by Margot Guralnick and Fan Winston. And these are the editors of Remodelista, which they've done several books. They have Gardenista, that sort of thing. And just like their other books, they're beautiful. They're eye candy. They're fun to look at. There is a large concentration of extremely high-end homes with very expensive furnishings that, you know, for me are not really attainable. However, what I loved about this one is all of the practical suggestions for low-impact living is what they call it. And it starts out with a low-impact manifesto. Number one is make use of what you have. Or as a Depression-era motto goes, use it up, wear it out, make do or do without. And there are 10 principles then after that. And then it goes into profiles of these just absolutely gorgeous homes, like a treehouse that, you know, that where people drink tea and there's a futon in there and that sort of thing. Completely self-sustaining home in Australia that doesn't utilize any electricity, essentially. My favorite profile was a Back to the Land kitchen garden. It's a profile of a couple who live in Germany, and they live in a home that is were post-war homes, and they were called settlers' houses. And they were used to house people very inexpensively. They were made with salvaged materials. The one that they own comes from an old sheep barn. So they moved from Berlin out to the country to live in this, and then they basically are homesteading off the land. So it has beautiful pictures of the garden and just profiles of people's lives, of creators, of people in the industry. But it also gives information on composting, on what to do with your stuff if you're donating, and better places to send it to, and a really cool section on old heirloom items that last forever. You can get your hands on one of these used, you're going to keep this, and you don't have to keep replacing those things. So really fun, and got me just reading this, thinking on my own about some goals that I had for living more sustainably that I'm actually going to take action on now. This book was the catalyst for that, so I really enjoyed it. The next one that I have was one of the best garden books I've ever read. It was called From Seed to Bloom, A Year of Growing and Designing with Seasonal Flowers by Millie Proust. The reason I love this one is that it's got the gorgeous pictures. It's eye candy, but it has an essay for each season, and each season is broken into two. So it starts in late winter, and it ends the book in early winter. I like that it includes winter. So many garden books are like, here's my beautiful garden in the summertime, yay. And that's really nice and wonderful, but it's nice to see a garden that's all gray. This is set in England. It's nice to see something that looks like what we're looking at right now and thinking about what can you do at this time of year. But Millie Proust went from London to Sussex. Her husband had to move there for work, and they bought this tiny little tumble-down ramshackle cottage. It didn't have heat. The first night they slept there, they had dew on their bedspread in the morning. It was poorly insulated, and they built this life out there. And so it's just a beautiful story about how she ends up getting rid of her, you know, London job and actually becoming a flower farmer, you know, doing weddings and that sort of thing. She actually has a seed collection now. But it's a lovely combination of essays, beautiful photography, and really practical tips. Things to get your garden started, special projects to do. Just a lovely book, From Seed to Bloom.
And I think we just got one more. I've got Shine Bright, A Very Personal History of Black Women in Pop by Danielle Smith. Smith it's a memoir by memoir slash music history slash music criticism. She is a journalist, essayist. She's the former editor of both Vibe and Billboard. And it really kind of talks about the music that's shaped her life in the form of the Black women artists that she has looked up to. And it actually starts as far back as Phyllis Wheatley, but coming more forward, and her poetry. But it also talks about the Dixie Cups. It talks about the connection of, and I forget sometimes that there is a connection between Leontine Price, Dionne Warwick, and Sissy Houston. They're all related.
Oh.
And talks to Gladys Knight, and talks about Diana Ross and Donna Summer and Whitney Houston and Aretha and Marilyn McCoo, Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey. But it sort of comes up through time, and it also kind of parallels her career going into as a music journalist. But it is a very interesting, a little bit for me, like Questlove's Music is History, the way she kind of looked at the bits of these people's lives and how the music industry treated them, or how the music industry both brought them up and failed them in various ways. So it's just a nice, interesting read that it sort of furthered me on my, I keep coming back to music history, and it's been very interesting to kind of look at that. But in the space of coming out of Black History Month and going into Women's History Month, I thought it would be a nice finish for today.
It's perfect. Excellent. That sounds great.
So it's been a month.
Yes, it has.
We will be back next month. Absolutely. But hope you have a lot of great reading.
Yes. Happy March is Reading Month.
Exactly.
Whatever you love to read.
Yes.
It all counts.
Yes. Audiobooks too.